What's going on, my beautiful people? It's Thursday. You know what that means. Another beautiful day here inside the Black Actors Studio. I'm your host, Danny Royce. And joining me today in the studio is an incredible talent. You've seen him as Rock on Straight Outta Compton. He's also been opposite of The Rock in Rampage. Don't move a muscle.
Tuned into Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Tune in right now.
Hey, we are here. It's your boy Danny Royce. Welcome inside the Black Actors Studio. I'm very happy to have my guest into studio today. You've seen him on Love Jack, Westworld, House, Heroes, Banshee, The Rookie, Justified, the list goes on. This guy is amazing. Please welcome, the Black Actors Studio is very proud to have Demetrius Gross. What's good, man? How are you? Nice to see you, man. Welcome. How you doing today?
I'm good, man. I like these little, so you can't see that out there, but they have these little reminders to mute your devices. It's kind of cool to be.
Yeah, we got to make sure things are right, you know?
The so we can hear you.
But I want to start off by saying congratulations on Fear the Walking Dead. I just aired the 15th. So how was booking that role and being on the set?
It was the first time I'd ever done anything, you know, regarding a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
You know, and so I kind of felt like was in a video game.
You know? Yeah, right.
Because they have all these amazing actors that choreograph their movements. And, you know, I was swinging an axe and, you know, zombie hunting. And
right.
It was a really interesting world to play in because, you know, often when you do contemporary stuff, it's very, you know, there's a lot more, you know, relationship to everyday life.
Right.
This is a whole different world. So it was fun to be in my imagination that way.
And yeah,
they have a
sure.
great team over there. I got a chance to work with some really amazing actors and producers
there. For sure. And you were, you filmed that in Georgia, right?
I filmed Fear of the Walking Dead in Texas.
Oh, actually. In Texas. Yeah. Okay. All
right. There's two. I think that there's the original
The Walking Dead.
The Walking Dead. There's the Fear of the Walking Dead.
Nice. Yeah. And so tell us a little bit about your character on
my character's a you know, in this world of the zombie apocalypse, there's a lot of enmity between folks. You know, they say that, you know, the zombies are predictable.
Right.
They're, you know, you kind of know what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the humans, the live people that
right.
are the juggernaut, you know,
yeah.
the volatile ones. And so my guy is very much a cynic and a pragmatist. And he lives on his own.
Right.
He lives on his own out in the middle of the woods. And, you know, you have to see it to believe it. It's interesting. It's too much more away. But
right.
It was a fun character to play because it had, like I said, it was in such a different world than I'm
sure.
used to playing.
And right. So, that had to be fun to play around in.
Yeah. It's always, you know, great when the imagination is activated in unexpected ways.
Did you ever, like, pretend shoot zombies when you were younger, like, you know, going around the house?
No, it's funny because I wasn't really a zombie guy.
Like, really?
In the video games I played were, you know, they were more like, I don't even want to name them because I don't want to date them. But, you know, it was just literally an opportunity that when I read it, it was intriguing. And,
right.
And I got to play in a different space than I'm used to, so I took the leap of faith. It turned out well. The producer said they like it, so
yeah,
I'm excited to see
it. So that's a win. There you go. Yeah. And so in the studio, we always like to start off the beginning.
Okay.
Where were you born?
I was born in Washington, D.C.,
hey,
Chocolate City, the Mecca.
Chocolate City.
You already know. I mean, you know, it's definitely more of a melange now.
Yeah. So how was the growing up in D.C. and the family dynamics and all that? With
D.C. was, you know, it's funny. I travel a lot of places in the world, and I just feel very grateful to be from my city, and mm-hmm. specifically from the time that I grew up there.
Right.
I mean, it's changed so dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
And while it's become, you know, some would say it's become safer and more commercially viable, you know, the culture is still in a learning curve.
Right,
because, you know, back then, you know, it was a volatile city. It was a very, you know, dangerous place in some pockets, but it was also very beautiful. And, you know, we'd have things like Georgia Avenue Day and the Caribbean Day Festival parades. Nice. And, you know, just the culture, you know, being in a backdrop of Howard University and all of that.
Right.
So it's it's interesting when I travel in different places of the world, and I see burgeoning progressive black communities that remind me of home, you know, because that's what I grew up, you know, around, you know, just black, hardworking, working class families who cherished culture and community.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
And so it's still an awesome place. I still go back home often, you know.
Okay.
I still have family that lives there. So
that's what's up. Did you have any siblings?
Yeah, it was a brother and a sister.
Okay.
And actually, we still own the house that we grew up in.
Really?
My mom has moved on to another spot, but my sister still holds that spot.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. That's dope. Did you have any nicknames growing up?
Yeah, I was Little Man. And a less cool nickname, but I just recently remembered it was Black Little Brother. That was what they
Black
called.
Little Brother.
That was just Black Little Brother. It was a dude that lived up the street from me who was really like a big brother to me, and his name was Black. So we were the same complexion. So, and I wasn't as popular as he was, but you know, I was always, you know, tagging along. So they used to just call me Black Little Brother.
Right. Black Little Brother.
Yeah. Now I guess when you string it together, it's like it kind of makes more sense.
Right.
Black Little Brother.
Black Little Brother. Okay, all right. I can
you asked.
Go with
you
that. I did ask. That was it's a very unique one. Now, and how was the dynamics with your mother and father in your life growing up? And
well, I mean, my mother definitely, and the man that I know as my father was in my life.
Okay.
For sure. He just transitioned in 2013. Same month, like within weeks of my son being born. So it was interesting.
You said he's just transitioned?
Yeah, like he passed away. But,
okay, gotcha.
I mean, yeah, I would consider that my father. I mean, he raised me since I was like a child.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I mean, I was very fortunate to have both of those presence
in my
home and in my upbringing.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, now, especially nowadays, it's not as common, you know, especially for black communities. Growing up, when you went to school, like, when did you start getting interested in acting and the entertainment and all that?
You know, I used to answer this question very differently. Now I realize that I always kind of had a propensity towards characters and making voices. And, you know, I was a guy who would call at my mother's office with a different accent and a different voice and try to, like, throw off the receptionist.
Oh, wow.
You know, I'd be the guy in class that would try to find the perfect moment to make a joke. You know, one of my early teachers in I think middle school or elementary school said, you know, if you want to be the class clown, you can be the class clown. It's just all about timing.
Like, yeah.
If you time it right, then it can, you know, breed levity in the moment. But if you time it wrong, you know, you're going to go to the principal's office and you're going to get suspended or something. So,
and a teacher told you that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty dope. Good advice.
You know,
comedic timing.
It's all about timing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess that translated into high school and developing TV shows and stuff. You know, closed circuit broadcast shows and not making the basketball team, you know, and still having that desire to perform and tell stories. And I loved English, you know. I loved reading literature, and you know, what that did to our, you know, what it does rather to our concept or our ideas about the world around us, you know.
For sure.
You read something about Baldwin, or you read a great poem by like Langston Hughes, and it's like, you know, 40, 50 years removed from your experience, but it still somehow relates to you and you can identify with it. Those kinds of things really kind of burgeoned my desire to be in film and acting and theater.
Okay. You know? And don't feel, I didn't make the basketball team either, so.
Yeah, I know. It was great. I mean, you know, but one door closes, another opens.
Right, exactly. what were some of your favorite TV shows, actors that you saw growing up that really inspired you to be like, oh, I want to do what they do?
Oh, man, I was just thinking about this the other day. You know, I remember, you know, we had VHS's way back.
Yes.
Way back, you know what I'm saying? So we watched the same movie over and over and over again. And, and so I realized that those movies were intrinsically, you know, a part of my groundwork, you know, like why I desire it. And those movies were X by Spike Lee,
mm-hmm.
Coming to America, starring Eddie Murphy.
nice.
Funny enough, Home Alone.
Classic.
But these, I mean, these are not classic. Necessarily like movies that, like, were the defining reason why I decided to become an actor. But these are the movies that were on rotation. These
are
movies
of course.
That we watched over and over again because we had the time.
Are you excited for Coming to America, too?
Yeah, of course. And it's great. I'm glad they got it off the ground and got it completed. I just co-executive produced a movie with Leah Daniels Butler. Uh-huh. We just did a movie called Survival.
Yeah.
Elise Neal and I. And hopefully that'll be coming out at the end of this year.
Awesome.
So, yeah, I'm just always excited for her team and their family and all the cool stuff they're doing. I think they're doing the Billie Holiday biopic coming up as well. So, yeah. I mean, I guess that in a nutshell, maybe Coming to America, X. those are some old movies, guys.
Right, VHS, but,
VHS. But there was something about that though, because you would watch the same thing over and over. Now, I mean, we're on to the next.
I don't remember the last time I watched something again after you know over. It had to be like years past.
Yeah.
So, what was one of your like first work that you was it a play? What was it when you really was like got into acting?
My first thing, you know, I always think of the first time I actually did a monologue was in school. I had to do a book report, and I did a report on Benjamin Banneker.
Okay.
And I think something may have happened that day. Like I spilled milk on the paper or I lost the paper. Probably might have lost it. But my mother, you know, God bless her, she was like, you know, why don't you dress up as him and just talk about it or talk about his life as you're him.
Man,
and
that's dope.
That memory is so vivid. I remember, you know, standing in the mirror with I had long white socks pulled up, you know, like the old
stockings.
I think we made up some belt buckles or the loafer buckles.
Yeah,
out of.
Yeah.
My mother's, she had some door knocker earrings or something. I think we put those and glued them on it. I mean, it was creative, but I remember doing this voice and kind of pretending to be Benjamin Banneker. That was the first time I think I really was like, oh, this is cool to be in your imagination. And I do remember it being really successful. And I mean, of course, since then, you know, you do professional theater performances.
Of course.
And film and television stuff. But that, I think, was the first time that I really said, oh, this is cool. And you can shift the paradigm with storytelling and personification of a character.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think that's really kind of where I'd like to go into more and creatively is starting to play.
Producing plays and stuff.
Well, that, but more so performing real historical historical figures in our culture.
Yeah.
That you know speak to me in a way that I feel like I can emboss or galvanize their relevance in today's culture. You know what I mean?
That'd be dope. That'd be actually a nice production.
I'm just thinking of like, you know, it's always this is like acting is an interesting thing because you can either write your own thing, you can audition for what other people write, or you can kind of channel what you're looking for what's out there.
Right.
And I've been doing all three, and I think it's It's interesting what you can manifest, you know,
for sure.
What you can attract if you have a definite intention and write down that plan and how, you know, the universe, God will put that opportunity in front of you.
Right.
So yeah, just kind of thinking about like what do I want to do now?
Okay.
And you just helped me stumble upon it a little bit.
Hey, there we go. Yeah. For sure. When was that transition to LA? Did you move straight from D.C. or did you go to New York?
No, actually, I got out of school in 2005. I started in Pittsburgh at Carnegie, mm-hmm. and left and went to Howard for a minute, for
Howard,
a couple semesters. Yeah. I went to Oxford, and I came back to Pittsburgh to finish up in 2005 at Carnegie. I came out here in 2006, I think, or the end of 2005, beginning of 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of did New York for a hot minute just to take meetings and kind of get introduced to the theater community
right.
up there. But I had been kind of going up there growing up in D.C. and
for sure,
you know, just being able to be a part of that theater culture up there. But yeah, I came out to L.A. I think 2006, probably like the end
okay.
of 2005, beginning of 2006. And yeah, while I go back east often, I mean, I've pretty much kept a good nest out here,
right.
You know, since then.
What was one of the biggest challenges you met coming out here?
Man, I think the biggest challenge of LA is it's a very esoteric thing. Like, it's hard to put your finger on it, actually describe it.
Right.
You know, like you love LA, but you like if you're from East Coast, like your experience in LA is informed by your experience on the East Coast,
right.
you know, and when you're on the East Coast, you miss LA.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of, I won't quite call it a love-hate relationship, but it's kind of like this, you know, this pool where you know, once you're here and you get into it, you love it, but then, you know, you kind of want to get out of it.
Yeah, you want to take a little break.
But I think the biggest challenge probably would just be the traffic and how big everything, like all the streets are wide, and
so big,
there's not that, I don't know, it doesn't feel like it's that interpersonal feel,
right,
you
right.
know, that I grew up used to, but you know, you evolve, you grow, you
mm-hmm.
change, and you learn to appreciate you know, things that you didn't necessarily see a value in before, so
right.
I love the geographic diversity here, you know what I mean,
for sure,
the mountains,
for sure.
the beach, you know.
Everything.
Every, you know, all of that.
That's what's up. So I'm getting to some of your credits, because they're amazing, for one. But straight out of Compton, I want to talk about that, though.
Yeah.
How was booking that role? And what was one of your favorite moments on that set?
Booking that role was a really interesting story, because I got an email from Rob Hardy, actually, who we worked together on a ABC show
mm-hmm.
with Forrest Whitaker. So we kind of kept in touch, and he sent me an email that somebody had sent him that there was this open call that was happening at a recreation center, like actually in Compton.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, classic open calls. Like we want to give everybody an opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought it was a really, you know, kind of ingenious thing, because you know, I thought it could really breed like a lot of authenticity in the film, which mm-hmm. ultimately it did.
It did, yeah.
And so I went down for the open call. I didn't like go through my agents or anything, or
mm-hmm.
you know, managers, or I said I want to show up, and I was out there all day, like you know, with the homies.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I think it started about 9, and then it wrapped up about 4.
Okay.
And they didn't really consider me for one of the roles actually at first, because they were really looking for the band members.
Right.
So, eventually, I finagled my way to get in to read. I think I read for Dre, and then I read for Suge, and I'm obviously not either one of those guys. And then, you know, like, I guess months later, literally, I got a call from the director.
That's crazy.
Like the same day, you know. Uh-huh. I don't know if somebody else fell out
or
whatever happened behind the scenes. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
But Gary was like, hey, you know, I know you classically trained and you know, you got a theater degree, but I need you to come down here and do this little hood thing. I don't know if you could do it. And I think he was kind of nudging me to amp up my, you know, my street swag.
Yeah.
But
bring out DC.
And then literally he was like, all right, come down here. He gave me the address. It was a very different experience. And then when I went down there, we just revised the scene and kind of improvised it, locked it what we wanted to do, and we did it. Universal loved it. They put the scene at the beginning of the movie before the credits, because I think the scene originally was like deep into you know, the second or third act.
Okay.
And so then they moved it up. And I guess my favorite moment was actually, you know, sitting in the Video Village and talking to Dre about the, you know, the difference between the process of working with Tupac versus working with Kendrick, and how they differed as artists and as, you know, producers, what that experience is like. And then, you know, being in the little scene where we were running through the dope house, and Cube was actually on the camera. I think we probably might have shot on the red or whatever, dragging. And I just remember him doing the whip, you know, like when we go around the corner.
Yeah.
Cube wanted to hold the camera, so he's in the corner, like on, you know, I mean, he's also executive producer, but he wanted to be like a camera operator.
Right,
you know, so that kind of stuff was fun. I mean, these are guys I grew up watching.
Right.
You know, we all grew up watching. And just to see the amazing stuff that they're doing now and to somehow be tied into that legacy is a really cool thing.
That had to be an incredible experience. You've done a lot of, obviously, a lot of TV as well, you know, Westworld, Heroes, House, The Rookie.
That's where you got your start.
Right. What would you say, like, one of the biggest differences of a film and television for you?
I think with film, you have more time to tell the story through your behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And in most television, unless it's on more of like a premium cable network, like shows like you see Watchmen, there's a little bit more time to allow the camera to find the thought process of the character. Whereas I find in television, it's so heavily reliant on the writing and the storytelling. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes you're getting out story points in the performance.
Right.
And you can sometimes let the story evolve just visually. But I feel like television is exciting because it's you have also sometimes more creative risks, I think, especially these days in terms of the characterization and the stories that we're telling streaming and on broadcast television.
For sure.
Whereas the studio film pedagogy is one that's like pretty well-oiled machine. Like there's a certain formula
to follow.
How it works. Mm-hmm. You know, who needs to be the leads, what these characters need to communicate from the beginning of the film to the end of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And in television, because we're talking more serially, you get to evolve that character and take it through more of a journey over a longer period of time. I don't think either one is better or worse. I think they just have different approaches and different strong points, and they reach the audience in a different way.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So you find the win in each lane. You know.
What's your thoughts about you know, nowadays there's a lot of binge watching, right? Television.
Yeah.
We can find it everywhere: Hulu, Amazon. I mean, Netflix. Do you miss kind of like that, I wait until next week to see what happens? Or are you,
I like
or do
that.
You like binging?
I do. Yeah. I like both. I like binging. What was the last thing I binged? I can't even remember the last thing I actually watched either, and I kept watching it. I just couldn't stop watching it. It was like 2 in the morning. I gotta get off of this
television. Gotta get it right.
But it's exciting though when something is coming out every week.
Yeah,
you know? I still kind of like the fireside. They call it the fireside effect. Like back in the day, people would gather around.
Yeah.
So that has novelty. But I mean, we in a new world. Times change. You know, you get on your phone and watch. You know, 10, 15 episodes.
Right.
You
know, you literally.
But it is cool. It is cool when stuff comes out. Like, I did a show called The Brave, and it was like a thing. I think we aired on Mondays, and I just remember the vibe. Like, people were waiting for that Monday to drop, you know? And so that's just an exciting thing because, you know, coming from theater, there's a little through line of that energy. Like, mm-hmm. you know, when you're about to do a play and, like, you feel the audience outside and the curtains are drawn.
That energy is like none other. Yeah.
And so, like, translating that into, you know, the television film world, that's kind of the cool thing about broadcast when mm-hmm. when it's, you know, we're going to have our episode on Tuesday or have it on Thursday. You see people on social media kind of getting excited.
Right.
There's a reaction. you know, it's sort of a build, a wave that's fun to ride. But, you know, it's just different.
Yeah, it's different. It's different, bro. I want to take the time to say thank you again for joining me. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio. And also, thanks to everyone who's watching right now. And if you enjoy this interview, go ahead and click thumbs up, subscribe, all that good stuff. If you would like to watch the full season one of Inside the Black Actor Studio, you can go check us out on www.theonchannel.com. And you can subscribe there and watch the entire season one up there waiting for you. And a big shout out to Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro for allowing me to come in here every week and bring you these amazing guests and their amazing stories. So what's one of your favorite, because you do a lot of military, a lot of cop work and all stuff like that. Like,
I've done my fair share.
You've done your fair share, but for sure.
Yeah.
What's like one of your favorite characters in that realm of profession on television?
Military?
Yeah.
I guess so far, I mean, I only did one season of the show, but Preach was a fun character on The Brave. It was an NBC show. Mm-hmm. I think we premiered 2018. Mm-hmm. We were airing. I liked that character because it was like he was a military guy, but he also wasn't, you know, a cliche, just like, you know, hunt, go get the bad guys, you know, shoot them up, smoke them out. Type of guy.
Right.
Like, he somehow had this, like, you know, philosophical, you know, proletariat, like intellectual approach to everything. And that was cool to see a character written like that.
Right.
And you know, the writers also were very you know, open to us developing that. And that goes back to that thing of, like, you know, doing a television show where you get to see the character develop over a longer period of time, whereas in a feature you want to see that beginning, middle, and end arc within an hour and a half, 2 hours. So I like that one.
Yes, yeah, that was a good one. I mean,
I realize I haven't played that many, but I mean the Rampage one.
Yeah,
I was. I mean, when I read that, I was like, "Yo!" I mean,
which would lead me on to my next. Yeah, Rampage. Yeah, I mean, The Rock is like, if I had to fanboy out, it would be two people: The Rock and. wow, I can't even think of his name. Why can't I think of his name right now?
It happens.
Blanking out. Morgan Freeman. How was being on the set and on that movie?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what did you learn?
Man, I learned there are levels.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Levels.
Yeah.
You know, I remember he doesn't, well, in that particular film, maybe because he was also at the time producing Ballers and also at the time
a lot of stuff
in like two or three other movies, like when he wasn't shooting and when we weren't like opposite each other, like he was not like just on set like eating crackers and like, you know, drinking espressos,
right,
waiting. No, you know, like he comes in, he shoots. You know, or he comes in, we do a rehearsal, we shoot, you know, we go over a little bit, we turn around, we shoot something else, and then he's, like, back to the trailer. I'm, like, all the rest of us, like, we were, like, waiting, and, you know,
because
that's the biz, you know, you hurry up and wait.
Hurry up and wait, yeah.
But, you know, he's a busy guy.
Yeah.
He's more busy than most, so it was just interesting to see the, you know, just the levels and how it's good to be busy and like and doing multiple things. It was kind of fascinating to see his team and how they move and all of the things that they have going on seemingly simultaneously and how they keep all of that in the air. I thought the director was really, really incredible.
Right.
I think he's an underrated director.
I mean, yeah, it was a huge film. I mean, the premiere like took over all of Hollywood.
And audiences are smarter than ever before.
Yeah. Oh,
so,
yeah, of course.
I mean, to have a movie about, you know, these animals that, you know, have taken some serum and now they're, you know, humongous and tearing down Chicago is very far-fetched, but it's a fun ride, like, when you watch it. And it was, like, one of the first movies that I could, like, watch with my kids.
You know? Nice.
It's a fun ride. For what it is, it's a really fun movie. It did well. It did well globally.
Did.
I think
very
it made,
well.
Like, half a billion dollars
it
worldwide.
Did very well.
So it did all right. That was a fun. But, you know, back to your military thing.
Yeah.
When you asked me that, it's funny. I realized I haven't played that many military cats.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think I can probably count them on one hand. But,
yeah.
But I seem like that.
I guess it's like that essence and what people see you as. Mm-hmm. You know, you got that very military essence.
Yeah, it might be.
Then so how many children do you have?
I have two boys and a girl.
Two boys and a girl. Yeah.
You have kids?
Hands are full. I don't. I do not at the moment.
That's cool though, man. I mean, it's. It's the hardest but most
rewarding
thing you ever do in your life.
That's right.
And when I say hard, it's just because when you know our crafts, our careers are ones where you know you grow into it, having such a singular focus,
right?
And you know it can be consuming.
Yes.
And then you know a beautiful thing happens to you, like have children, and you kind of put it in its proper perspective, and while it's still priority to you creatively and industrially, in terms of like life and soul and spirit, and, you know, legacy, you know, your kids like really jump
for sure
naturally and rightfully in that place of priority in your life, and then the choices you make creatively, like the choice that you know I make choices a little different now in terms of the things that I do and the projects that I get on board for because you know I know one day that I want my kids to be able to see it.
Doesn't
mean I'm like just gonna do like you know cookie cutter you know blue sky stuff. But if it has more depth and if it's grittier and if it's edgier and if it's whatever, like I want it to still have you know artistic integrity. I want it to have some kind of message and be meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, characters should have an arc and not just be a archetype.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So it adds in that way.
Okay. You know? And so how has your family dynamics changed your acting or your approach to the craft?
My family dynamics. It's just more time management.
Yeah. More time management.
Energy
I feel it.
Because you know you want to. I like showing up
with
my family. You know, I love it. I coach baseball. You know, I'm there at basketball practice.
Nice.
I'm there at soccer practice.
That's what's up.
You know, I'm trying to speak French when I can.
Hey,
they're at an immersion school, so I'm working on you know just speaking it more to get them more confident in it. You know, it just makes you be more intentional about your time management and your how you place your energy. I think before I was a father, I just didn't have the unction or the compulsion to have to be so specific about my time creatively.
Mm-hmm.
So I might just you know read this and. Go watch this.
Yeah,
it just kind of
now
grows.
It's like I gotta think about
it. I gotta think about this.
Right.
Is this the best place to put my time?
Right.
Like, is this the best place to put my focus?
Right.
You know.
Do you ever mix family with work? Like, have you ever brought them on set and do all that?
Course. Yeah. Okay. I mean, because when I was in I think I did Banshee.
Yeah.
And I had my son on set.
Nice.
You know, as a baby, I don't know, retrospectively, I'm like, what was I thinking? Because at any moment, he could have just destroyed it.
Right. You know, everything.
The whole show. No, just by literally just by crying. He could have just like destroyed a take,
right?
You know, I mean, it was good. It worked out, but and then this past weekend, we started some principal photography on a movie I co-wrote, and I'm executive producing,
mm-hmm.
and he's both of them are in it, so I kind of doubled them because they look kind of alike.
Nice.
Spoiler alert! So and so we dressed them up in the same wardrobe, you know. Gave them some of the same actions for their takes.
Right.
And, turned out well. We're just looking at the footage.
Nice.
We're just starting to kind of comb through the footage to get to our first edit of that.
Okay.
I think within reason.
For sure.
You know.
For sure.
It's good. They have an interest in it.
Okay.
You know. Right. I'm also trying to get them to have an interest in storytelling and writing and their reading though.
Yeah.
That's the
I think game. Reading is harder for as the generation now for sure, because it's just like
Much is right there. So everything. they have on their iPads, their little tablets,
and
they can watch things and still be learning.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a certain process that I believe is happening when we're just reading words.
Yes.
And we're having to call upon those images
for sure
in our own mind or from our
I agree.
Our cipher.
Yeah.
So we try to encourage that because that action is a huge part of being innovative
right.
in the creative process.
Right.
So
what are your thoughts on where Hollywood's going as far as, you know, inclusion representation of the Black community? Behind and on the camera, where's your thoughts?
Where is it going?
Yeah,
up.
Yeah,
you know, it's going up. Mm-hmm. It's going up. I think it's also it's paradoxical, right? Because we oftentimes are still in the sales portion of the industry.
Yeah.
So even when we are developing, we still have to pitch and sell to, you know, people with more, you know, dominant economics, I'll say.
Yeah, so, right.
But then there's a flip side to that coin because everything is kind of open source. Like you can control your distribution now.
Right.
You know, I think that was the through line of that was that Magna Carta
Holy Grail.
That whole thing with Jay-Z and Timbaland and all those guys, and they were kind of like saying like the game has new rules,
mm-hmm.
and so that is a paradigm that we find ourselves in film and television, mm-hmm. as well. You
right.
know, what the musicians found out in music is that they don't have to worry about studios to distribute their music.
Right.
And I think that's what we're finding as filmmakers and as actors and as storytellers is that we can find sophisticated ways to get it out to people without having to wait for someone else to buy into something.
Right, and the mega production company and studios. Yeah,
it's exciting for that reason.
Right.
And of course you have your vanguards who are at the top, you know,
right.
and are in their zone, you know,
yeah,
who still, you know, 30, 40 years later have that white hot space. And then you have, you know, burgeoning artists who have more of an opportunity than ever to get their work out there.
Yeah.
And have more propriety too.
Yeah. Yeah. We're definitely the times have changed for better.
In a positive way. Yeah.
Let's get it while it's hot. So I know that you're a fan of The Rock, right? Peter Maivia, not Peter Maivia, his dad, but Rocky Maivia.
Yeah,
you grew up watching.
His father passed away.
And then
I went on this whole thing like I just found out that his father passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was all of these other wrestlers who had like passed away in
the last months,
and I learned like Jimmy Fly Snooker.
Yeah, Jimmy Fly Snooker.
Jimmy Superfly Snooker.
Superfly, yeah.
Yeah, he passed away, and it was like, I was like, dang, yo.
It's crazy, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a lot of, wrestlers that just passed away that were really young, Eddie Guerrero, Chris Benoit, like, it's just crazy. But I have some questions.
Okay.
So we're going to see a little Rocky trivia. See if you
we doing a Rocky tribute.
See if you can do good. Yeah. See what you do here. All right. I'm gonna ask you 5 questions.
Yo.
Okay. We're gonna see if you can get them right. All right.
Talk about on the spot. You didn't even tell me you were gonna do this.
All right. What role does The Rock play in the movie The Mummy Returns?
I think he. I'm gonna take a guess.
Okay.
Right?
Educated guess. Here we go.
Yeah, he plays like a Tomb Raider or some sort, like a mummy slayer.
Close. The Scorpion King.
Scorpion King.
There you go.
I think actually, yeah, I don't know if I saw that movie.
All right. What is The Rock?
Scorpion King.
Yeah, The Scorpion King. Okay. Yeah. That was the after The Mummy. What is The Rock's full name?
Well, I mean, that's Dwayne Johnson, right?
Yeah, but he's got a middle name.
I don't know his middle name. I don't know his middle name.
Douglas.
Douglas?
Dwayne Douglas. Okay, I think you got this one. What is The Rock's father's professional name?
Rocky, right?
Hey, there you go.
Yeah, Rocky, I just learned that.
I
learned that one.
All right.
I did not know this was going to be... This is hilarious.
What popular show did The Rock host in 2000? Okay. Was it A?
Yes, multiple choice. Yeah. Yes, multiple choice. A chance.
Was it A, All That, B, Jimmy Fallon, or C, Saturday Night Live?
Saturday Night Live.
There you go. Hey.
Educated guess.
Educated guess. All right, and last but not least.
Shout out to Eddie Murphy, though, for just, like...
Right, that you know, part.
Putting on his 45 and coming out like, yo, I'm still that dude. Crushed Saturday Night Live. That was awesome.
All right, I'll give you... this one's also multiple choice, okay?
I bet.
Where did The Rock meet his wife? Was it... A.
Yo, like, how, like, come on.
Hold on. A.
I'm a fan. I didn't say I'm a maniac. Or, like, I'm creepy. I don't know. I
mean, a. But go ahead. At a club.
Let's guess. Okay. At a club. Go ahead.
B. At a wrestling event. Or C. At the store. Club, wrestling event, or store.
I'm going to say the store.
It was a club.
It was a club. Yeah. I was going to say that, but I was like, this sounds like...
Yeah, he actually bought her a drink. I know this because I know...
Because you were scrolling and finding out all the weird facts.
Let me just say, I've been a fan for a long time.
I've been a fan, too, but these questions are... These are interesting questions. I would be concerned if I got these questions right. Like, that would be weird.
You got 2 out of 5. That's pretty good, you know?
There's a lot of people I don't know the answers to these kind of questions to. Could you imagine if I knew all of those questions?
I would be like, wow.
Yeah, that would be kind of strange.
That'd be kind of crazy. Yeah. Like, I didn't even know all the questions.
I kind of feel glad I didn't get them right.
I knew, like, 3 out of the 5. That was pretty much it.
I got 1, right?
No, you got 2.
I got 2?
You got 2. Saturday Night Live and then Rock. Okay. There you go. But I'd like to thank you so much for joining me into studio. And I just want one last question that I like to ask all of my guests here. Heaven's real. You get up to God. What would you like him to say to you?
Well done, my good and faithful servant.
Hey.
That's it.
That part.
You know?
And let's end it on that. Thank you so much for joining me, man. It's been a pleasure having you. Folks, thank you so much for watching. Demetrius, go ahead and tell them where to find you. And if you have anything coming up, share it.
Hey, you can catch me at Demetrius Grows across all social platforms. We're kicking off season 6 of Fear the Walking Dead.
Hey.
This summer, also check out Body Cam. I was in Mary J. Blige. It'll be in theaters this year from Paramount Players. And film on the way called Godfrey.
Godfrey. Yeah. Nice. Love it. Yeah. Keep your eye out for this one. And thank you so much. You can find me everywhere at I Am Danny Royce. We'll see you next week. Same place, same time here inside the Black Actor Studio. God bless.
God bless.
Digital Broadcast Network, devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Check out our Black Hollywood Live YouTube page for even more great programming and amazing content. And be sure to subscribe and like our channel when you do. I'm your BHL host, Nakia Monet, and you can find me on all social media at Kiki Boom Boom or at Black Hollywood Live. Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood redefined.